And you are now entering the Big Daddy's podcast.
Ben, thanks for taking the time to do this with us, man.
Absolutely.
I feel guilty. Like, you're a busy man. You're a principal. Yeah. You probably got detentions to hand out. And
yeah. Anything for the big daddies.
Come on. Oh.
All right. Let's get this off. Man,
we have dozens of fans. So this is just be careful what you say, because this will make its way back to your school at some point. Okay.
Well,
Ben is a big fan of my mom, like his favorite aunt.
Aunt Kathy.
She's our number one fan. So you know she's gonna listen.
All right. Yeah. If anyone's gonna hear it, it's your aunt Ben. So yeah. First question on the record, Ben. Tell us about your OnlyFans account.
That's my primary source of income, really. Lots of fans.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's a public access.
Oh,
really.
Yeah.
I have one of those special accounts.
Everybody knows
principals don't make that much money.
Okay, all right. First off, on the record as well, that's a joke. I make that joke, though, Ben. I feel like I can't open up the news anymore without a teacher getting in trouble. Their own. Have you heard about this as well?
I've not heard about teachers getting in trouble for OnlyFans, but you know, it's hard because when you're in this job, like, you are definitely under the public microscope eye a lot more, so you have to just be more careful with what you do.
Certainly. Well, I'm a youth pastor, so I'm just I'm hair above, like, sketchiness, like, because you're a principal at a public school, correct?
Yeah. High school,
it's like, I feel like I barely slide above, like, youth pastor getting into that kind of trouble, so it'd be even worse, I think. Is that fair to say, or is that like what
I mean?
Know.
I feel like you're a youth pastor, like, you're like right there by the Lord, like, just right underneath.
I know
you're doing his work. You're doing his work.
I know, but so was the devil, you know, before he fell. Oh, so
that is true,
man. Ben, can we kick this off? Do you got any good stories for us that, because Ben has recently transitioned to from middle school to high school, correct?
Ben.
Tell us about that. Give me just something for the fans, you know?
Great question, Jacob.
I've heard some crazy ones, and you feel free to go where you want.
So, I mean, but today, for example, we vaping is a huge issue, so I won't make any jokes about that because we're sending kids home left and right for that, and they need to be very careful with that. But I will tell you this: yesterday, and I know this is probably a G-rated, PG-rated podcast. Where are we at here on the level?
I think do you, man. You know what whatever you feel like comfortable getting out there. It's
fine. What I will do is I will reference that. On one event that I'm thinking of was at one of the schools I was at, and it still to this day just kind of blows my mind. But there was a kid that has, you know, a little bit of disciplinary problems here, sent him to my office a few times, stuff like that. Looks right now, this is no joke, looks right at his teacher, classroom full of kids, and just yells out, "Big voluptuous titties." Just yells it out and looks right at the teacher. And I know that I feel bad for even saying that word, but the teacher came in my office, as she rightly should, very infuriated. And I sent that boy home for a good number of times. But you just sit here and you think, you hear something like this and you're like, who does this? Like, whether they're in middle school or high school, who says those words out loud? One, in a group of people, and two, who just says that out loud in a classroom setting?
Oh my god!
I don't know if that was probably appropriate to share, but that was one that is just, like, you know, just wild. Like, we also have student council elections. This is a recent one. We had student council elections going on, and, you know, kids are great, especially in high school. They'll just, you can relate very well. They're like young adults. This girl came up to me. She's running for class president. She said, "Hey, would you mind if I photoshopped, like, your face and me, like WWE wrestling.
Oh my gosh, right.
And I said, absolutely not. Like, you cannot like have me wrestling you, a guy, a girl, a student. That just would not, no. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's just stories like that. But I will tell you this, in all seriousness, and at 100% all seriousness, there is no other job that I'd rather do than be a high school principal.
Man, then
it really
a special person.
I really feel like it's a mission. Whether you want to take that as a religious mission, non-spiritual, I mean, like, I view like myself and these teachers being here for kids every day. So I get excited to come to school every day.
Ben, you need to run for Congress, because I will move to where you're at just so I can vote for you.
Bro. North Carolina. Come on, Jackson.
Listen, brother, this is the only job for me right here, being with these kids and helping them make good choices in life.
Yeah, come on, dude. That's
actually
really,
part of why
it's really very cool.
You know, it is. And that's actually part of why I wanted to bring you on. Everyone, Ben's my cousin. If I don't know if that's made it in already. But anyway, because you being a principal, like you just said, your mission, I feel like there's a lot of kids that don't have good father figures in your life or in their life as students. And I don't know, like, can you elaborate on the mission? Cause I'm not even sure you're coming in here being like, you know, I'm going to be a father figure to them. But I would think that kids would look up to you instinctually.
So what I will tell you is I'm very good at separating, I think, my personal life from my professional life, in that I can compartmentalize. Like, if I have a bad day at school, which very, very rarely happens. I mean, bad things happen and there's bad situations, but I'm still very blessed to be here and feel very fortunate. But I can compartmentalize. When I get home, I'm at home. When I'm at school, I'm at school. So I don't necessarily view myself as a father figure when I'm at school, but what I do view myself as, my teenage years in high school were some of my all-time favorite. Like, high school for me was the best. I mean, I fell in love for the first time with the girl, got broken up with for the first time. That was tough. We got our driver's license. We had car wrecks. We had peer pressure. I mean, there were so many things. So what I try to do is, one, just be real, like, be authentically me. Here I am. But I just try to remember what it was like to be a kid and relate to him in that way. Now, every once in a while, a phrase will come out like, I mean, I'm a dad myself, or I'm a parent myself, because you do it. Becoming a dad, becoming a parent made me 100% a better educator without question. Like, I saw things differently. So it did have a huge impact on my role. But I try to view myself as just being here for these kids as a positive influence in their life, whether that's a father figure to them or not.
It's up to them,
but they're going to get expectations and opportunity are the two words. There's expectations on how to act and not act in school, reference in the comment that boy made just blew my mind. But every day, every kid that walks in this building has an opportunity in every single class to better themselves. They're going to have opportunities, good or bad. Like, they can go to the bathroom, someone could offer them a vape pen. That's a bad opportunity. Right. But they can make something good from it if they say, nah, not for me, and peace out. So expectations and opportunity are huge for me.
Mm-hmm.
Expectations, opportunity. Okay, so Ben, when the teacher comes in fired up, wanting you to handle like this this comment shouted across the classroom.
Yeah.
Tell me, like, internally, what was your immediate reaction?
I'm thinking
like, that's kind of hilarious, and I have to not laugh. Like did that light bulb go off or what?
I laughed partly mainly because I was just angry. Like, because who, again, expectations, like, who does that? Like, that's not a social norm.
Right.
But what we also have to remember, and this is very important, what we as educators, me as a principal who does the discipline along with my sister principal, what we have to remember is, they're kids still. Like, they might be tall 17-year-old people and you're like, they're adults, but they're also still kids. And we have an opportunity to provide them accountability. And whether kids say it, they like it or not, kids crave accountability.
Yeah,
they know that
you
do X, you get Y. So when that teacher came in, or when any teacher comes in, obviously whatever happened in their classroom that was negative behavior-wise with the student has affected them and affected their ability to connect with their kids and teach their kids. But so I try to think of, okay, let me listen to them first, because everyone wants to be heard. So I try to listen. And then I think about the kid. Do I know the kid? What's their background? Have we had issues like this before? Have I talked to their mom, grandma, aunt, uncle, whoever? All of this runs through my mind. But then what also runs through my mind is, okay, this is how I'm going to hold this student accountable for that. And I'm very, I mean, I'm all about giving the same consequences, no matter if they see me or one of my assistant principals. So I go off of a discipline matrix here. You do X, you get Y, doesn't matter. Boy, girl, it's an equitability. Now there are some things that do play into it because not everyone, right? Not every kid has their dad locked up in jail. Not every kid has, are placed in foster care. So there are extenuating circumstances that we do have to think about. So I just try to listen when a teacher comes in how can I support them? And then how can I hold the kid accountable, but also hold them accountable and do so in a positive way? Cause that's important.
Something you were saying, you said, being a dad has helped you be a better educator. Mm-hmm. On a flip side, has being an educator helped you be a better father?
That is a great question, Jacob.
Oh, and stop.
It is. And let me tell you why. Because I have a wonderful wife, Jacob's cousin. His cousin-in-law. I'm the in-law cousin.
Married in.
But I'm the favorite in-law. I'm just kidding.
Hey, you are. So, it's out there public.
Public, right. So, but you know, I have seen so much in this job from middle school to high school. Being a high school teacher, being a middle school administrator, being a high school administrator. I mean, I've just seen a lot. And so it has kind of jaded me in some regards, because if my own kid, her name's Seda, let's say she does something at home, like I immediately want to fly in like strong accountability, like hardcore, like this is how it's going to be. Yeah, I'm so sorry. You get like X. I mean, like for her, it's like,
but she's also four, right?
Right. She's four. Okay, so it's like I threw my Cheerios. So I have to be mindful of, all right, well, now you don't get a book before bed and you don't get this, you don't get that. Because at the end of the day, it goes back to what I just said a minute ago. She is a kid, right? She's a four-year-old kid. And that's what I, as a dad who works with big kids all day, struggle to remember, is that I'm working with 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds. Even at the middle school when I worked with 12, 11, 13, 14-year-olds, is those kids they're cognizant. They know a lot of right from wrong. Seda, she knows right from wrong, but she's still growing in that regard as a young child. So I have to force myself to have a lot of patience. And my wife does the best parent, the best. I could not be more blessed than to have her as my wife, but for my kid to have her as her mom.
Come on. It's good, Ben.
We're going to make sure she hears this.
That's right. She does need to hear this. So that way I'll be like, see, I love you.
I meant it. So good.
Sarah, that was not planned. Anyways. No, that's really cool. It wasn't. That's cool.
Well, yeah. So Ben, let me hit some bio questions with you, and then we'll get into the questions, but the proper questions. But Jacob, have my back. Just interviewing.
Oh yeah,
helping the world get to know Ben. So Ben, where did you go at university?
Yep. So when I graduated high school, I was a foreign exchange student in Italy.
Let's.
Yeah, it was awesome, and they don't do this anymore, and probably I'm an example of why they don't do it. So I graduated with my high school diploma, but I did another year of high school in Italy. So before I went to college, so I knew that the expectation was for me to go to class, like doing a fifth year of high school, pretty much. But equally, I knew I had my high school diploma. So there'd be days where I'd be like, I don't feel like going. I'm going to hop on a train and go to Milan and check out the site.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was probably, but that year in Italy shaped me, you know, going forward. So that's why I start with that. So when I got back from Italy, I went to UNC Asheville, University of North Carolina at Asheville. I majored in Latin with a teaching license. And
wait, pause real quick. Tell them what your teaching name is in Latin.
Oh, magister. That's the Latin word for teacher. So everyone called me magister. You know how like when you're in Spanish class and people say, hola, senor, like in Latin, we said, salve, magister. So people just called me magister.
Come on.
I had a license plate that said it too.
I have it now.
Jacob has it now. Yeah.
I do have it now.
Yep. I got my bachelor's degree in Latin.
Wow.
Then I went to the University of Georgia. for my master's degree, and I got my master's degree in Latin, thinking I was going to be a high school Latin teacher forever and a day. Amen. I got teacher of the year for the district I was in, which was the Inca district, and got really involved in more meetings, more interaction amongst the school, and I really liked it. So I got, just for fun, because I'm like 25 at this point, got another master's in master's of science in school administration. And then I had an opportunity to move into high school administration as an assistant principal, and I was really torn.
Yeah.
Do I want to give up this great classroom, these great kids teaching Latin, which is a not a common thing. And I had a great program, to go into something that every school has, which is an assistant principal. And I did. And I would say it was really hard, but I missed the Latin classroom every day. But I love where I am now, because I was an assistant principal at the high school. Then I went to be an assistant principal at the middle school. Then I went to be a principal at the middle school. And that was all well and good. But high school is truly my passion. I love the age level. So being a high school principal, it truly is a dream job. I'm not making that. There's no exaggeration. I really look for, right now, it's 8:30 at night almost. And I'll be back here at 6:30 tomorrow morning. Like, I love it. I'm not dreading it. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
I mean, outside of being a dad in this podcast, not many people could say that. So I think that makes a difference, at least in those kids' lives, that you get to show up and be like passionate about it, and not, if you were dragging going in there, you would not be a fun principal. So
thank you. I try to be very exciting. Again, it goes back to being your authentic self. And I'm just a very outgoing, positive, kind of eccentric sometimes person.
Yeah. So Ben, do you just have your one daughter?
Yes. We have one daughter, and she's 4 years old, and her name is Seda.
Seda. Very cool. So was that hard taking on this position of a principal? Because you are the principal, man. You are the leader. You are first one in, last one out. How is that going?
You know, and I'll be very direct with this. My wife, again, this goes back to Sarah, my wife, because we had to have conversations about this. She is one of the most incredibly supportive people, because she knows how much I love my job and love what I do. And when it came to middle school principaling, I was able to come home at a reasonable hour, 5:30, 6 o'clock. I still got there at 6:30, but I still get to see my kid. But being a high school principal, I mean, like last night I got home at 9:30. Tonight I'll probably get home at about 9:15, 9-ish, and my kid will be asleep. And there are days where I don't see Seda, because I leave in the morning before she's awake. Yeah. I come home in the evening when she's asleep. So I see her, but we don't interact. And so I'm incredibly thankful to Sarah for being, is the main parent.
Yeah.
And it is hard, because it's a sacrifice. Do you say, I mean, think about that as a dad. As a dad, you think about it. Do I have this job and this career, which I love, which nourishes my soul, also nourishes my pocket, because our primary source of income.
Of course.
And then on the other side, you have this little girl that's beautiful, wonderful, smart, exciting, fun little girl that you're not getting to engage with, because you're doing this other thing. And that's hard for me sometimes. I very much, Sarah will tell you, I struggle with that. So what I try to do is on the weekends or the evenings, like for example, I have something every night this evening except for Thursday. So on Thursday, I'm going to make it a point to get home by 4:30 at the latest, just so I can be with Seda.
Yeah, good. That's awesome.
So for you, that's just being extra intentional, obviously. Like that's your go-to with that.
Yes.
Because I think that's good for other dads to hear, because I'm sure more than like I don't struggle with that, right? Which I'm grateful for. But that's, I feel like for teachers or administrators as a whole, that's probably a very real struggle for all of them. So can you expand on that at all? Like,
yeah, and I do. And I want to expand on it to a super specific area, and that's teachers, because I'm very passionate about this too. A job of a principal is to lead a school and to lead a community. I mean, it truly is, because I have 1,200 students here, about 100 faculty, adults, teachers. And any decision that I make, whether it's about how we're going to run a classroom or how we're going to operate this school, it impacts those 1,200 kids, those 100 teachers, but it also impacts everyone that they are associated with too. So, I mean, it's a serious responsibility. I tell you all that to say, when you go into administration, you know, like that's the expectations. You know that that is the expectation of the job, especially if you're going to be a high school principal. If you're going to be a good principal, kids need to see you. Parents need to see you at their events. And it's hard because you're basically saying, I'm giving my time to other people's kids instead of my own. But where it comes to teachers, and this is incredibly important for me to say, teachers are one of the hardest working people in society, period, stop. And when I say that, their job doesn't end at 3 o'clock or 3:30 or 4 whenever they get off of work, because they have to find the time to plan those lessons, wow, to prepare, yeah, the material for those, yeah, lessons, to contact parents of kids who are not doing well, either academically, behaviorally, trying to forge relationships. On top of, I'm sure their district gives them professional development they have to do. Yeah. Their principal could or could not be, they could have a micromanaging principal. I mean, and then they carry this stuff home with them. And while they're sitting on the weekend trying to maybe watch a football game or be with their own kid, they're like, oh, let me think about this. Oh, let me think about that. I tell teachers all the time, when you go home, be home. Do not check your email. An email can ruin a weekend. It can ruin a date night. When you're at home, be home. When you're at school, be at school. But it's hard to say that because I know teachers are checking their email. Yeah. I get emails at 1 o'clock in the night that is about someone else's kid that they are focused on and worried about. Wow. So teachers, I wish our society, I cannot say this enough, I will always and forever be a fan of separation of those two things, because teachers deserve that. But it is immensely hard, if not impossible, to do. And every time I make a decision, I think always of a kid first. And that's how it should be. It should be always be for the kid. But on the heels of that, it should be for the classroom teacher and how they will carry out that decision and how that decision will impact them in their classroom and their students.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I feel like, Ben, that's just got to contribute to just such great leadership for them, because I hear so much compassion and grace and understanding and empathy for them. Like, look, I've been in the dirt just like you are, and I'm not forgetting where I came from. Like, I am so aware of this is a really hard job. So I just feel like that would just help so much, a teacher coming to you and opening up or complaining or needing help, as you haven't forgotten, you know, this is the hardest job.
It is
so important. And there's so much more I want to ask you about that, but anything else on the bio, Jacob, that you think we need to know before we dive into these questions, man?
No, I think, well,
are we ready?
I think we're ready, just because I feel like we could talk so much about which means we need to bring you back. So already marked on your calendar, Ben.
Well, I need leadership advice. I'm partnered with a middle school. We take a ton of their kids every Friday because we're right across the street. I have so many things I want to ask you. So yes, we do got to get into it on another time. But so Jacob, let me open up with this first one, and then
Before you do, I want to open the first one. Let me look at it real quick. Yeah. Let me open it just because.
Oh yeah, do it.
So I haven't seen Ben's dad in quite a long time. But honestly, I don't know if I've seen him since your wedding, which is insane. When did you get married? That was like 2008.
Oh my gosh. I think it was 2008. No, it wasn't 2008.
No.
It was 2011.
11. Okay. Apologies. Mm-hmm. Anyways,
you need to edit that out. Someone might didn't hear that.
we'll make that happen.
Right.
But your dad, correct me if I'm wrong, was your best man in your wedding, right?
Correct.
Okay. I just wanted to put that out there. Like, let people understand, like, get a quick look at the relationship you two have. But so go ahead, Jackson.
Oh yeah. Well, first one out the gates, Ben, what did your dad do best?
The best thing that my dad ever did was want me to live with him. Let me say that what I mean by that. My parents were married and we lived on Fort Bragg. My dad was in the 82nd Airborne, and I had a sister, and she passed away when she was 2 and I was 4 years old. And my parents took it very differently, my mom and dad, and they ended up divorcing because of that. And I have this, I still can see it in my mind, this very ingrained image when my mom and I are pulling out of away from Fort Bragg, and I'm waving goodbye to my dad, and he's just sobbing. I mean, he's in his uniform because he's a soldier, and he is just sobbing. And I remember that so clearly. And when I think about that now as a dad, it kind of gets me a little bit, because I love my daughter so incredibly much, mm-hmm. but to know that I wouldn't be, I mean, this is like what, in the 90s or like 1990, and we didn't have FaceTime or anything like that. You had to, long distance calls were expensive. So to know that he wasn't going to get to see me every day or talk to me every day, that immensely hard, immensely difficult and gut wrenching. And so I just see that. Tragic. And then my dad really, you know, wanted me to live with him because he saw that I was having some struggles in school. You know, my mom was working some jobs, and I think he thought he could offer me a lot more opportunity than she could at that time. And so he just continued to advocate my mom to let me live with him. And she did. And that was the best thing that could ever have happened for me. My life would have been 100% different had I stayed with my mom. And I'm not saying my mom was a bad person or a bad mom. I mean, we all have so many things going on in our life after losing a kid, and that, I mean, I can't even imagine what that's like. And she was there for me, but she was also a single mom trying to, you know, support a kid, process a daughter's passing. But my dad, I think he saw he could give me so much, and he did. So him asking me to live with him was the best thing that he could have ever done for me. And I will ever, forever be eternally grateful.
And so when did you go and live with your dad? Like how?
So we left Fort Bragg, moved to Florida, to Orlando, Florida. Huh. And I did kindergarten there, first grade and half of second grade. So 5, 6, so about 7.5 years old, I moved to be with my dad in Asheville.
Okay. See, even me, I'm learning stuff right now. So I like that you're getting into the weeds of it.
Yeah. That just encourages me to just soak up my son Spencer so much, Ben. You know, and that's like so sobering. Just how we can miss so many opportunities and not be excited about the little, like he's 2.5. And man, that is extremely heavy, man. So thanks for being authentic like that right out the gates. Really help me just in this moment, just appreciate that, like my son's 10 feet that way, you know?
Yeah. And not 10,000 miles.
No. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, something that Anthony, he was our second guest on the podcast. And he really drove home this point of like, you really need to appreciate every moment you have with your child, because you never know when the last one will be. It's like Cal's about to start walking, and like, he's not going to be a little crawling baby anymore. And then he's already got 8 teeth. So I'm like, I already missed that little gummy smile he had. But next thing I know, it's like, I won't be giving him a bath anymore. I won't be changing diapers anymore. Something for Hannah. She was like, I don't have to feed him in the middle of the night anymore. And like, she actually misses that, as brutal as it was getting no sleep. So yeah, it's good to drive home that point of just like really, really being present and appreciating, I guess, every minute you have.
Yeah.
So that was powerful. What do you feel like people are so used to hearing a single mom raising a child, like any light you can shed on that for a single dad? I mean, I know that's not what you had to do, but like for your dad doing that with you, especially being in the military.
So my dad, he left the military for.
You can talk. You need to. You good?
No. Okay. See you tomorrow.
Sorry. Look, you still teach.
Tell
right
your
now.
Students that this is your time, Ben. That's they right. need to leave you alone, bro.
That's right. So my dad left the army so that way he could get custody of me. Mm. And he left a career that he was enjoying, right? Horrible. Being in the 82nd Airborne, but he wanted me so badly to give me opportunity. He was selfless. He put me over himself, which I would hope any parent really would, you know, would do. I mean, the love we feel as a parent, and y'all know this now, but the love you feel as a dad, as a mom, you can never describe it to someone that doesn't have a kid. It's just, it's undescribed. People used to try to tell me, like, oh, Ben, you, the love of a parent. Yeah. And I was like, I know that you just love them a lot. It's just like a lot of love.
You kept telling me about it. And I was like, all right, sure.
Yeah, you can never feel it until you become one. So yeah. And then he left the military, and then I moved in with him and my stepmom. And then when I was 14 years old, they divorced. And so from 14 to 18, it was just me and my dad. Mm-hmm. And it was some of the best years of my life.
Dang, that's super
all
cool.
Of high school, pretty much, just me and my dad.
What's your dad's name again?
Dwayne.
I like Dwayne. Mm-hmm. Rock on, Dwayne. Like, party on, Wayne.
That's
like,
right.
Wayne Thoreau. What did he end up doing after he left the military?
Oh, he became a funeral director.
My guy.
But he didn't have his license, so he had to work three jobs to put himself through school, which he did. So that way he could provide for me and my stepmom.
Wow. People need to take notes right now. We shouldn't interview your dad, honestly, but we'll stay focused on the present topic.
Sure.
So as awesome as your dad was, anything you wish he did differently or maybe could have been differently just because of the circumstances he was in?
You know, I read that question earlier when I was thinking about, these questions. And I know, like, this sounds wild to say. We can all find character flaws in every single one of us. Myself, I can name a lot. Myself, I can name them in other people. People can name about me. But the selflessness that he gave me, right, that he left a career, advocated for me, I have nothing that I would ever change. He gave me truly, and still does at 35 years old, unconditional love. So no, there's not one thing I wish he would have done different. He made himself always available for me. And if there was anything I needed or wanted to talk about, he was there.
Wow, man.
So I don't have a good answer for that question because my answer would be, no, there is nothing different.
That's fine. That's an answer in itself. That's a great answer.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. So with Seda, now the microscope's kind of being pointed. Did I say her name correctly?
Yep, Seda. Yep, S-E-D-A.
Four-year-old Seda. I can tell you just love her. You hate missing those nights away, you know, providing for the family, furthering the school, and helping so many other people out. But with her, what's your favorite thing about being a dad?
There's so many. I think one of my favorite things that I look forward to every day is when she's awake, when I get home, is just that first moment, right? When she sees you, she just gets so excited, and it's just wonderful and it's fun. Or when you, like, if you happen to be sleeping beside your kid or they're sleeping with you in your bed, and when they first wake up, they, like, boom, they're ready to go, and it's just exciting. So just seeing that makes me happy every day that I get to see that. It makes me happy.
I'm definitely like hearing you talk about it gets me hyped up for when Cal's big enough and knows I get home. Mm-hmm. And he's gonna be like,
yeah,
full face, his mouth unhinged, smiling from the top to bottom, just running on his little baby feet.
Yeah, wonderful.
It warms your heart. All right, everybody, welcome back. Unfortunately, Big Boy had to run off. He's A1 grandson. He had to go put his pop out of bed. I hope I said that right, Jackson. I guess he fell recently, so prayers for them. But he's been a good grandson, going to put him to bed. So that sounds terrible. Anyway, Ben, welcome back.
What's up?
All right, so something you and I had talked about once that I wanted you to elaborate on if you feel, if you're willing, but for some dads out there, does it happen where like how long did it take to find, like to find a bond with Seda? Like, can you elaborate on that?
24 months.
24 months. Okay.
So, I have told you this story before. So when Seda was first born, it was really difficult for me to connect to her. I was at an assistant principal at a middle school at that time. And just, there was so much at home. There's so much at home happening, so much at home, that I was just dreading always going home, because like with Seda, like she was brand new, she was a brand new baby. And I just did not know how to connect with her. My wife, Sarah, was doing an amazing job, just knocking it out of the park all the time. And I just didn't know how to connect. And then I'll never forget when she turned 24 months old, 2 years old, something changed. Like it was like a click. I don't know if it was because she could speak a little bit, right? She could communicate, she could walk. Like it was just something happened. And I fell in love with her immensely. Not that I didn't love her before, because I did. Like dads, I mean, I don't think it would be right to say like, oh, you would never love your kid when you first see them. But I felt like I didn't really fall deeply in love, like have this real bond with her until she turned 24 months old. And I don't know why that is, but it was what it was. And now I have this amazing connection with her.
I mean, I'm glad you share it, because I feel like for me, the older Cal's gotten, the more I like him or love him. When I like, he's just becoming more and more of a human. So it's like, it's more and more fun to spend time with him. You know, I think there's a factor, I'm sure, that you could relate with, like you were getting up super early, so you're already exhausted.
Yeah.
And I think there's something to be said about your cognitive abilities when you're sleep deprived, or your irritability, or whatever it may be. But I know for me, I was grumpy for sure with that lack of sleep in the beginning.
Yeah, it was definitely. I mean, Seda would be awake for 30 minutes and sleep 30 minutes, and be awake 30 minutes and sleep 30 minutes, and she didn't latch at all, and we didn't want to do formula, so Sarah was an exclusive pumper for 2 years.
Oh my gosh,
and she's amazing. Again, it took a toll on her. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, it was anyway. 24 months, I felt so connected to her.
Yeah. I mean, even like when Cal was born, I feel like it's different. It's just, I don't know, like the mother gets the baby and it's like an immediate bond. But I know for us, I was like, I mean, like you said, I loved him, but it's like, you got to get to know the guy.
Yeah.
My buddy Carson, he has a second kid. It's another boy. He has an older son already. And he was like, nah, Peyton, which is his second son, he's like, Peyton's got to catch up to Hudson. Like, we ain't got that kind of bond yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So throwing shade at them. Well, cool. I appreciate you sharing on that. So hopefully that brings a little encouragement to some dads that may have gone through that and not feel bad about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. I think it's a, you know, it's not right to not speak about it, because other people have, I'm sure, could, like you said, could relate to that. But you know, I cannot tell you enough how much I love her now in that 24 months. It just, I don't know what it was. It just changed.
Any advice you could give, or just give it time?
Give it time, but be involved. It'll never change if you don't make yourself involved. And maybe, I mean, right, maybe that was my issue. Maybe I should have been more involved, and I don't know. I mean, there could be a myriad of things, but one of your questions is, well, how do I get better, right? I think, isn't that one of the questions?
Yeah, that's actually the next one.
It says, look, that was a perfect segue then.
Way to go, come on.
What am I trying to get better in? Being involved, right? When I'm home, being home, I'm so bad. My wife will tell you this, I'm so bad. I am so bad for picking up my phone and wanting to scroll on Instagram or Facebook. And because I think it's so mindless and so relaxing for me when I get home, like I don't have to think about anything. Like I can just chill, but there's a little girl right there that needs me. And so I cognitively and strive to work on putting the phone away.
That's powerful. I don't know. I think we may have mentioned this on another podcast, but there's a guy that he it's a book I've mentioned like every podcast, Becoming a King, I think it was called. And he talks about like when he would get home, whether it's stopping at the end of your street or stopping in your driveway and just like taking a deep breath, whether it's praying or just thinking like, all right, give me like 10% more or like I just need 10% more to get through the rest of this night and just be a present father, be a present husband, right, and be the best that I can be for them. Because as I feel like I've had such a long day, and I know for you, you definitely do, but like they've had a long day too. So let me go in there and be like concerned about how was their day, or how's my kids day, you know, how's everything going? So that's powerful. That's hard though. That is definitely hard.
Yeah.
You're a great dad, Ben. Keep it up.
Thanks, big daddy.
Come on. What else are you trying to get better in? Anything else sticking out to you?
Man, I feel like I try to get better as a dad all the time. I mean, I don't think it's one of those things where you wake up and you're like, oh, I'm the expert. Parenting's a journey. No kid ever is the same. I feel like I try to get better in everything that I do, every single thing.
Yeah. That's true. I think I'm sure we're going to fail quite a bit. So definitely have some grace for ourselves.
Yeah, you know, but I think you only learn to fail by doing. I mean, you only learn to do by failing. That's how it should be. You only learn to do by failing, right? I think I was an okay Latin teacher because I knew Latin, and I could impart it pretty well to kids, I think. But I wouldn't have known that unless I would have struggled to learn Latin and made mistakes. Or as a principal, I mean, one of my favorite things about being in administration is I learn and improve as an administrator every day. I love new challenges because all that's going to do is help me to grow as a better school leader.
Yeah, absolutely.
Same thing for a parent.
Right. Well, Zach, everyone's Zach's my brother, but he would always say, like if I made a mistake at work when we worked together, he's like, well, you're not going to do that again. And yes, you may make the mistake again, but it's like learning through that trial and error was definitely the most, the way it stuck the most for me.
Yeah.
So I can relate to that one.
Yeah.
Who, what's the next one? What do we got? Who gives you hope for the future?
I had to pause there just because I also like to read it visually.
No rush.
I feel like I've talked a lot in this interview about my job, as well as being a dad. But for me, they are so intertwined, which is funny, right? Because I said, I compartmentalize. And I do. I'm very good at when I'm home. When I'm at school, I'm school. But I don't know who could be a principal and not take it with them always. Like, it is always with me. It is always, it is just there. It's just inside of me. Like, it's a life, really. So as corny as this is going to sound, who gives me hope for the future are these 1,200 kids I see every single day, for which my daughter will one day be a part of them. And the reason why I pick them, these high schoolers, is because they're about to go and make their effects upon the world known. Like, they're going to go into the military, they're going to go into the trades, they're going to go into university or college and get degrees and learn how to do skills and defend our country, and they're going to impact it, and they're going to impact our world. So these kids every day give me hope for the future.
Wow. Well, I obviously, you and I know each other well, but I feel like when you and I talk, we just catch up, goof off kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's been cool for me to hear a deeper side to what your day-to-day looks like and your past and your fatherhood. And, but that's kind of something I noticed when you started talking about it, is I didn't realize you had 1200 students. And it's like, you're like the president on a small scale, but the amount of people you can influence is, I don't know if I'd say scary. It's wild though. Yeah. It's like you have a position to do a lot of good or a lot of bad. I think most principals go in hoping to do a lot of good, and I think they probably do, but that is it's an immense amount of power. But it's cool. And it's cool to see you living up to that responsibility.
Yeah, you can't take it lightly. I mean, you impact people's lives, their school life and their home life, in every decision you make.
Yeah. And then how you said, you know, it carries on to everyone they touch.
Correct.
I don't know how do you compartmentalize that? Because I feel like going home, I would be thinking about who knows what regards to school.
You know, I don't know. It's just, I've always been able to. My wife would tell you that even when I was a Latin teacher, I did that. And she would get, I think this was a struggle for her in that I don't like to talk about my day. Not that, I mean, I get hostile. I'm like, no, I'm not going to talk about it. But like, I don't go home and say, let me tell you about the day I had. Like, I just, or like, let me tell you about this really great thing that happened today. I just have never done it because unless you're here as an educator, you don't understand. Like, You can you can hear stories and you can see and you can think, you understand, but like from the vantage point that I have as the principal who sees the teacher, the student, the parent, the athlete, the coach, like it's just, there'd be so many background factors to share that it would be exasperating to share that and then share the story. So I don't know how I compartmentalize it so well. I just do.
Well, I mean, I think it works though, because it helps you be present with Sada when you get home, right? You're not dwelling on one, the school day you just had, but also the school day is impending because it's just going to repeat the next day.
You're right. Exactly.
So
exactly.
Well, who on your team can keep you in check? I feel like I know this answer already, but
my wife.
Elaborate, please.
Is that the answer that you thought I was going to say?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Because Sarah's so sweet, but she can crack that whip.
Yes, that, there you go. Done. That's what it is.
No, we need to hear you say it.
Sarah will not do anything that Sarah does not want to do. And for me, she gives me a lot, like extra grace. Like we've used that word a bit tonight too, but she does. She gives me a lot of that. And she supports me in so many ways, but she will also tell me, like, I know when she's upset, and she definitely keeps her the phone thing. She'll be like, maybe you could be present with your daughter. Like, she'll just say it like that. Or like, she'll say, you're supposed to, like, it's your job to empty the dishwasher in the morning. Like, that's your job. My job is to do X, Y, and Z. And it's not like that she would never empty the dishwasher, or I would never do something that usually she does, but like, she will keep me in check. Yes, absolutely. She said once, and I love it. I don't know if she likes it when I say it, but she told me, she's like, you're the person that makes me the most angry, but you're also the person that makes me the most like happy too. Like it, I think I can push her buttons, but then she still loves me. And yeah, so she keeps me in check. She's my answer.
I believe it. Well, you're keeping these kids in check all day. Someone's got to keep the principal in check.
That's right.
So that's mama.
Yeah. But I would say at school, you know who I think that is though? Honestly, I think I'm my own biggest critic when it comes to that, because I try to be so mindful of these teachers and how I can make them have a great classroom environment for their kids, because they're the ones with the kids. So I feel like for when at school, that keeps me in check. But when I'm at home, check Sarah.
Everyone needs that. I mean, shoot, Hannah, little mama, she's always first they're sour, then they're sweet, you know, little Sour Patch Kids. So
little Sour Patch Kids. I like that. Little Sour
she's
Patch.
Like, I'm sorry, I was so mean. Or whatever. She's not that mean. She's not mean at all.
I couldn't imagine ever little mama being mean.
Granted, it's probably me being a little butthead. So
that's me all the time.
It's self-inflicted, right? Well, you got a couple more minutes. You good to keep rolling for a little longer?
I'm ready, brother. Let's keep rolling.
All right. Let's get into something that tied in all together and end it right. What legacy do you want to pass on to your children? But with you being a principal as well, how do you want to pass on a legacy to your students? If you can answer both, or however you want to go for it.
You know, this is a hard answer, because the answer that I want to give is not the best answer because of pressure. It puts on a lot of pressure for what I want to say, but this is what I want to say.
You can answer as authentic as you want, or can keep it off the record if you want.
No, we can keep it. We should keep it on the record, because I do want to be authentic in it, because this would be my answer. I started with expectations and opportunity. That those two words are huge to me. The other thing that is huge to me is work and dedication. And so if we take expectation, opportunity, work, dedication, those are four very powerful words. They are four selfless words in terms of you have to give of yourself. The opportunity, right, you get, hopefully. But expectations are high. Work is a lot. Dedication requires giving of yourself. So all of these things are hard, because it leaves little time for self-care or for family time. One of my favorite movies, and this will be perfect because I hope many dads have seen it because little kids love it. My little kid loves it, is Encanto. Have you seen Encanto?
Yes. She goes, oh, and drip, 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 gonna let it drop. Yeah.
The pressure song, right?
Pressure. Yeah, yeah, pressure. There you go.
My favorite character in that movie is the grandma, the abuela.
I think you told me this, even though I think she's so mean, but continue.
But the reason why I like it, in fact, she uses the words work and dedication to keep the miracle going, right? So, like, I like her because she is, I love to work. Like, I love it. And I it's not a good thing probably sometimes, but like, I'm dedicated to this job. It means a lot to me. I'm going to work hard. The expectations on me are incredibly high, but the opportunity that it gives me and it gives my family is bountiful. Like, it's great. So if I could leave a legacy, it would be work and dedication and expectations and opportunity is what he really strived to live by and give to our school and to give me as my father. Those would be the things that I would want to give. And in that opportunity, I'll sneak this in that opportunity, the movie, Abuela in Encanto, she realizes that she was putting so much pressure on her family that the miracle was ending really because of her. But she saw that. So in not falling into the Abuela trap from Encanto, I would say in the opportunity, you have to realize that you cannot do it all. You can't have immensely high expectations where there's constant pressure that you can't enjoy your life and be present. You can't always work so hard and be so dedicated that you're taking away from, you're going to give a lot of yourself, but what you don't ever want to give away is your family. And so there's a very fine balancing act for all of these things. But through that opportunity would be my little escape route there. So I hope people would, you know, see that.
Yeah, I think they will. I think you're doing a great job. And you saying that, the word I kept thinking about was balance, which is not easy to say the least. But I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for sharing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, what about, hey, I got this one.
You got more questions? Okay. I mean, no. I felt bad keeping you from home. Come on.
Can I be morbid for a minute?
Literally, this is your show. We'll go.
It says, right, one of the questions, how do you want it to end? Now, how do I want my life to end? Let me tell you how. That's what I think of. I don't know if that's what the question meant, but I'm going to tell you exactly how, because I tell this to everybody.
Oh, I'm excited.
So this will be on the record. So that way, if it happens, it'll just prolong it. Obviously, compassion, love, and sympathy to anyone who has had a loved one go through this. I hope to die of a massive heart attack. But let me tell you why I do. I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
There's a few reasons. And I mean massive. I need it to be boom dead, like 1-2 seconds dead.
Okay.
I had a good friend, actually, who was a principal, and that's how he passed away. And it was incredibly hard for us. I'm not trying to make light of it, but let me tell you why.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yes. I mean, I would never wish it on. I mean, it's immensely hard. Grieving is hard. Yeah. And some people would not prefer that way. Now, this is a selfish way. The reason why I would want that is because here's the part why I'm glad it's recorded. I would want everyone to know I love my family. I love Seda with all of my heart. And if I were to die, I would want her to know I'm always with her. I love Sarah. She is my life. Like, she has helped me get to where I am. We do so many things together. She takes so many interest in the things that I take interest in. And she's a way better spouse than I am as a husband or as a spouse. I love my job. I love what I do. I love working with these kids. So I say all of that to say, I do not want to have a disease that takes me away from any of that. I don't want to have a cancer to where I have to go get treatment, which people should do, right? If that's the what they want to do for their family, but for themselves, obviously. But I don't want to have a something that's going to take me away from being at school. I don't want to have Alzheimer's to where I forget something that has meant so much to me, my daughter, my family, my life, my school. I mean, you and I have experienced that together, you particularly with your grandparents. And just to see them, the way you see people then they can't, they don't see themselves that way because they don't remember. I don't want that. And I don't want to die of, I don't want to say goodbye in terms of I'm leaving, I'm dying. Like it's going to happen soon. Like, yeah, we're all going to die. But like, I taught Latin. Everyone that spoke that language was dead. They've been dead 2000 years. I want to be doing something I love, whether it's at school, whether it's whatever. And that's how I want to go. Now, obviously the real answer would be, of course I want to die in my sleep when I'm old. Who doesn't want that? Like that's the cream of the crop answer. But I really hope that I am just, people know I love them. I lived my life how I wanted to live it. I had my drinks in the evening. I spent time with my daughter.
Yep.
I ran a high school that I love. And when I'm dead, I'm dead. So that's how I want it to end. Massive heart attack.
I mean, you make everything was a compelling point. So I'm not going to knock you on it. I'm with you.
Mm-hmm.
Massive heart attack.
But again, not making light of it. I do.
Yes.
I would not. I hate for anyone to have to go through that, but that's how I want to go. So that's
Understood. Hey, anything else you want to share? I mean, I'm not going to cut you off now.
Public education matters. Invest in your local public schools, support teachers, and be a good parent and be an involved parent. Check your kids' phones. Don't give them phones until they're older, like high school driving age, but check their phones. You pay the bill, open it up and scroll through it. Like, make sure that you know who they're hanging out with and be active and engaged in their life. Because if you don't, others will be active and engaged for you. And they may not be the best people. That there we go.
That's it. Thanks everybody for tuning in. Ben, I love you. Magister,
I love
you're the best. And can't wait to get you back on here.
Can what?
Can't wait to get you back on the podcast.
I'm ready. And can I say one more time? Public education.
Go public education. Hey, and go Rockets.
Go Rockets, baby. That's right.
Come on. What's the high school name again?
AC Reynolds High School, number one high school in the state of North Carolina. Go Rockets. That's our mascot. We are the Rockets. So that is the phrase to end on.
That's right. Go Rockets. Cheers, everybody. See ya. Thank you.